Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Timber Living Log Cabins. For your perfect workspace, living space or hideaway, timberliving.ie.
If you ask me to sum up my next guest, I would say she's mad, but she is also awesome in the real sense of that word. Like, you'd be in awe of her. Nuala Moore, nice to finally meet you in person. How do we describe you, Nuala? Explorer, extreme athlete?
Probably adventurer as
adventurer,
well.
Adventurer, yeah.
Life is an adventure.
Yes. No, your life's a bit adventurous than most. Just to give people an idea, first person to swim the Sailor's Graveyard at Cape Horn, the most dangerous waters in the world, part of the first swim from Russia to America, world champion ice swimmer, third woman in the world to swim a kilometre in 0 degrees water, and on and on. Come here, I believe you gave a talk to the Irish rugby team recently ahead of them heading off to the World Cup. What did you tell them?
I did, and it was so funny when I got the invitation to come and speak to them. The most exciting thing is like, oh my God, they're going to clap for me. They're going to tell me I'm amazing. And I mean, I was like, oh my God, that's going to be brilliant. It was a wonderful opportunity. And interestingly enough, when I got the invitation, immediately my brain went to certain things. And like for us in the swimming world, we don't tend to break down certain, I suppose, events and achievements. And in the Bering Strait and in swimming around Ireland, one of our greatest competitors is the sea. And as life moves on and as the swims go on into 10 days and 20 days in the round Ireland, the north coast and the east coast, we flew down because of the tides and stuff. And then when we headed south, I mean, Cork Coast never ends, as you know.
Yeah.
And then tides are running north-south. We're heading west. So the miles are going from 18-minute miles to now 50-minute miles. You're getting weaker. The tides are getting stronger. So it's all about staying strong in the face of your biggest competition, which is yourself and the sea.
Yeah.
And then the West Coast, in particular, when we were swimming around Ireland, took a month to navigate up the West Coast as swimmers. So you're breaking down and what you perceive to be your competition getting higher. So when you look at, say, just for those moments in time in the rugby, I mean, my mind went to immediately the need to stay strong. At some point, your competition will weaken. And even if it is the fact that it's the tides. So in the Bering, it was the same thing. And in the Bering Strait, you have a situation where it took 27 swimmers 6 hours to swim 2 kilometres. And in a normal state of play, you know, very few competitors would actually accept that as progress.
And keep going, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So
like it's attrition, really. They talk about attrition in rugby, but you know all about an attrition situation.
Yeah.
So listen, now you mentioned a good few of your adventures there. Before we get to them, you had an interesting way into this, right? Because you've written a book, Limitless, which is about some of your adventures and I suppose your journeys around the world and into your own head a bit.
Yes.
So you got into triathlons, right? And I got from the way you talked about triathlons that you didn't fit there. You didn't you didn't feel like the other athletes. You didn't look like them and everything. And that you decided you needed to find a different way into sport. Tell me a bit about that first.
Well, first of all, it was 20 years ago.
Yeah.
2002, 21 years ago. And I, at the time, the Ring of Kerry and big swims and stuff were what we were doing on a normal day-to-day. And I suppose when I look back on my life, I always tried to go further. And, you know, if people were trying to do something faster, I always felt, well, wouldn't it not be better to stay longer?
Right.
You know, I mean, the Ring of Kerry for me was like, it's a great day out. So when, no, but you're always looking for something.
Yeah. We'd start. So you were, since a kid, like, you were always looking to go more or further.
Yeah. My father used to take us out the harbour on a Sunday morning and throw us in and we'd swim home. And, you know, maybe people had told me as time passed on, we should really think that over again because we got home every Sunday. But it was never about the speed or the time. It was about spending time. So I was very excited when I got invited to do a triathlon. I thought, you know, I'm going to go down to Kinsale and do the King of the Hill. And I was, you know, I grew up with this sense of belief, you know, I could do anything I wanted to do. And then I presented myself in Kinsale and they were like lean, mean fighting machines. And I was like, well, this is not me. So I didn't really enjoy the day. In fact, I found it very upsetting because I was exposed to my own weaknesses that I didn't fit in. But I mean, in true style, I did the entire event in an hour and 40 minutes, which is a really good time.
Yeah.
But they were all gone home because they were uber fast.
Yeah.
So my response was to come home to Dingle and set up my own events for people like me. because there's bound to be at that time, which there turned out to be, a very large volume of people who were in their 30s. And how do you find a way into a sport that's really fast, that's going to judge you?
Okay.
So I allowed people to come into a sport without judgment. And then once you're in, you can define your own way forward. But, you know, I think for me, one of the greatest things is to offer somebody a platform where they can make mistakes and then develop their own system. And, you know, I, for the first few events that I set up in the Seven Frogs Triathlon, I used to give the prizes to the people who came, finished last, because I always felt it took more for them to start than it took for the fast people to finish.
Yeah, that's a whole different way of looking at sport.
Yeah,
it might have worked for a lot of people
when they
were younger. So I think after the triathlon experience, with the first big adventure then, when you decided I'm finding a different way into challenging myself and everything, you mentioned the swim around Ireland.
Yeah.
And you talked about, like, kind of, it was 5 days down the East Coast and 5 weeks up the West Coast then, basically.
Yeah.
But listen, this is the start of the madness, in the sense that, can you convey to people how the group of ye went to the edge of yourselves and to the edge of a kind of madness, didn't you, during that?
Well, I think you become institutionalised in anything we do. You know, if you spend a summer in Dingle, by the time you get to the end of August, we're all in that space where you don't know if you're, what day it is. Is it Monday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday? So I think what happened during the swim around Ireland is we immediately set up as being, we're going to swim between 4 and 6 miles every day, 4 and 6 hours every day each. And if you don't have any other plans for the day, that's not a bad day swimming. But what you don't factor in is when the challenges start to creep in.
Yeah.
When you get tired, the back-to-back immersions. We didn't have a psychiatrist or a psychologist or a nutritionist even. And then, you know, we didn't really factor in the fact that when you turn Tusker Rock, then tides are against us. But at that point, you start to sit back and you realise, right, OK, we are swimmers. We have to buy into the common objective. And there was a lot of pushback. I mean, I have control issues. You know, I wanted to know what was happening and why we were feeling this way. And there are no answers. So when the miles became 50-minute miles and you still have to do between 5 and 6 hours a day and you're 20 miles off the Cork coast and you're not making progress, you're asking huge questions of yourself, like, what is this about?
Yeah.
But that's where the team step in. And we had a wonderful team with the Sheephaven Sobaqua unit and Derek Flanagan, Brendan Proctor. Now, their job is to get us there, and that's the buy-in to the objective.
And the rest of life, though, falls away.
All that. You see, this is the problem.
This is
where I appreciate places like Base Camp Mount Everest or Cape Horn, because you don't see the cost of your experiences. So it doesn't really fall away, but you have to reconcile it, which was one of the biggest emotional battles, because you know you should be at work. You know you should be at home. You know when to turn the key in the door. Like, who the hell is swimming around Ireland for 2 months?
Yeah.
So it was supposed to be finished in 28 days. And then when we hit the West Coast and we weren't making progress. And, you know, the relay swim from south of just west of Sybil Head to Loophead, I mean, it was just the biggest battle of our lives. And you still have to get from Loophead to the north Donegal coast. And you have to reconcile the fact that you don't know when this is over, but you're in too deep to say no. So it was a huge battle. But that's where the team steps in.
Why do it?
Well, you see, this is the whole point. And when I looked back on writing the book, I was telling the story and then I thought, but that's not, we have to go back to the why. The why is, like, because at that point you get to see a version of yourself that's so strong, and you get to appreciate people around you being able to let you guide yourself through your own journey. The version of ourselves that we found in that unit is a beautiful version. And that redefined everything for me, because nobody will ever know what it took to do it. But we will know, and we will know what it took to achieve it. It's how you define value and achievement.
Yeah. And then you did come back, and you get the sense that when you came back, I think it's when you come back from a lot of the things, you talk about, what do you call it, the grey twilight at times.
Yeah.
Going back to normal life then, is it very dull after you've been at those extremes? Yeah,
it's not that it's dull. It's hard to reconcile. I remember the first few events, the big ones like Round Ireland, I remember walking up Green Street. There's nothing more levelling when you come home.
Yeah.
And you are just you. And it's like, turn the key in the door.
And you've a linen shop back in Dingle. Yeah.
But it's just when you turn the key in the door and it's put the kettle on. just get back to life. But it's really hard because for us, you know, there is no recognition and achievement that will ever match the sacrifice and the amount of work you've put in when nobody's watching. The pain and stuff will never be recognised. So when you try to value that up against normal life. So I really struggled with normality. I really thought it was really difficult when everyone wasn't me. I couldn't get back into other people's worlds because you had given up so much and the cost of that sacrifice. I mean, we have this event and so this statement.
It's almost like PTSD. Is there someone who's been to war? No one else understood what you'd been through.
Well, the only people that know what you've given up and sacrificed are those around you. And, you know, I remember thinking people saying, oh, sure, look, it's no bother to you. And like they weren't there while you went through the pain.
Yeah.
Now they will support you. But it's hard to actually say it. So I would always look out for recognition and it didn't come. There are no medals. And then as time passed, you know, very, very blessed with the people around me in a community in Dingle, you know, and stuff like that. And then you just start to realise that the value is inside. The value is the madness. The value is the fact that when you close your eyes at 2 o'clock in the morning, you know, I see Bugs Bunny and Clasinets. You know, it's fabulous.
Yeah.
For all the right reasons, of course.
Yeah. And we should say that swim around Ireland, that was a first of its kind. That distance in that level of water is the first time anyone had done that. Now, then probably the worst thing that could happen to someone like you, in a way, you discovered ice swimming. And explain to people what is ice swimming and what was the attraction?
Well, swimming in, look, majority of people now around the coast have taken to cold water swimming, so they would be very familiar with swimming in cold water. And in the last 5 to 6, 7 years, there has been an explosion of people who swim in very cold water. But ice swimming in itself, we discovered it back in 2011, and I had kind of hit this whole falling out of love with marathon swimming because I was giving up 5 and 6 and 7 hours to training and I was getting nothing back personally.
Okay.
And one of the downsides of the Round Ireland Swim is it had broken something inside me. I had lost that value. I felt I could do anything. And then when you rock up to do anything and you can kind of coast along at 70%, that wasn't pleasing me anymore.
Okay.
So then with the ice swimming.
So you needed a bigger challenge, essentially.
Yeah, but how do you define that?
Mm-hmm.
So basically, Anne-Marie Ward and I had gone off to New York and we had met up with Ram Barkai, who is the president of the International Ice Swimming Association. And at the time, very few, I think there was only 6 ice swimmers had completed a mile under 5 degrees. And of course, we were rolling our eyes going, whatever. So we immediately put our cards on the table and said, you know, you come to Ireland, we'll knock that out of the park. And we were always cruising for a challenge, Anne-Marie and I. And I remember getting into the water for the first time. It was so exciting because we trained. And I think we had broken every barrier of pain. Pain meant nothing to us. And when you break into that area, you can compartmentalize all of that for achievement.
Okay.
And I mean, it's an amazing place to be.
So explain how that works. So you, is it that you can just shut out the pain, not feel it?
No, but pain is part of the process.
Okay.
It's a cost of it. You know, I mean, there's a lot of people wake up with a hangover and they're aware of it's going to happen, but they still don't detract from what they're doing or going on a long run with the lactic fallout. So I think, you know, when you're going to take on something and you have a swim for 2 hours in cold water, you know the outcome. So you can compartmentalize it as long as it's not injury.
Okay.
So you take it on board. So for us, as long as we could find something that excited us. And what the beautiful thing for us is that a nice swim is over in 40 minutes. It's like, this is brilliant. We can have our coffee and have our cake and go home. And then in 2012, we were invited to Siberia. And of course, we were so excited heading off to Siberia. And it was 0 degree ice. And I'll never forget getting in.
So they're literally cutting, with chainsaws, cutting a swimming lane out of the ice.
Boom. Yeah. And minus 33 degree air.
Whoa.
I know. So, and suddenly you're hit with this thing. If you can't breathe, you can't swim. How is that going to work? And what excited me the most is I had so many questions. I'd come from this complacent bunny of like, I can do anything, to suddenly it was like, oh my God, what if? And there's an excitement in that to be challenged and pushed back. But I had just swam Lake Zurich, which was 26 kilometres, a 12-hour swim 4 months earlier. And like getting into the water at 7 o'clock in the morning, getting out at 7 o'clock at night, I felt... Who gets out of bed for a 20-minute swim? Certainly not me. And I remember taking off my togs, and Anne-Marie had just gone ahead of me. And Anne-Marie said, look, Nuala, there's no heroes. And I remember walking over.
This is the ice swim now. Yeah.
And I immediately decided I was going to do 1,000 metres because there was only two other women in the world had achieved it. And I immediately said, you know what, I'm in the game here. And I always had this belief, you just have to endure. You just have to push and hold on. And when I got into the ice, I got in at 0 degrees and I put my feet in and the pain, I knew exactly what everything felt like. And as I immersed myself in, I think you've done some very cold water swims too, Brendan. Mm. So you'll know when it comes up to your chest, that breathing happens. And most people will have experienced that cold shock. But we didn't understand it at that time. Mm. And I remember getting into the ice and suddenly there was a lady in the lane beside me and she had a woolly hat on. And she was like going off for an afternoon swim. So I just took off and I'm not a pool swimmer. So I had to go up and down the pool 40 times to swim a kilometer. And as I pushed off from the wall, everything went and I got a sense of panic. And about 5, 6, 7 strokes in, everything went me and I started to panic. And yeah. I never experienced panic. Panic was not, it was such a foreign thing to me. And as I pushed off the top wall and came down again, everything went. And this sense of control that I had all my life. This
so it's the head went, like it's not the body gave up, the head went.
But you see, it controls.
Yeah.
And then as I pushed back, I stood up at 150 metres and I was perfectly fine, but I put the feet under me and the pool offered me these opt-outs. And I hated that feeling where I had an option to get out. But I stood up and I took that option and I'll never forget standing up and climbing out the ladder. There was nothing wrong with me. And I really genuinely was so stressed that I had opted out of something as I watched the men achieve it. But my point was when I came home, I remember sitting at home with a cup of tea, trying to figure out how do I proceed here. So my response was, you know, I don't panic. So what happened? I'm never anxious. So what happened? So I sit at home at night with my pen and paper, trying to figure out, OK, let's fix the things that went wrong and find my way forward. And at that time, we discovered cold shock. So I reached out with education, uncovered what cold shock was, that you have to calm your breathing, you have to bring everything down, and then you have all the other responses. And then over a period of 6 and 8 weeks, I would go up into Peddler's Lake and I would sit there and I would just swim 1 minute extra every day and focus on recovery. And I went on in 2013, then just 6, 8 weeks later, to be the first woman, the first Irish swimmer, but the third woman in the world to complete 1,000 at zero. So it was just understanding what stopped me. Yeah. And then writing it down bit by bit. But what I loved about the ice was that it was about staying in control in those moments of crazy.
Yeah, but no, the thing is that, and you detail it in the book.
Yeah.
It's not like, I don't know, it's kind of unpredictable and it's a kind of a crazy sport in the sense that like, it really does like mess people up, like people, like it is actually dangerous, isn't it? Because is it that you don't know yourself that the body is starting to lose it and the head does lose it a bit then, doesn't it? Like you can see people coming out of it like in an awful state.
Yeah, but I suppose it's like any sport. The sport is fine. It's the actions of the individuals when they're doing the sport and the distance and the time and the team you support around you. And I mean, one of the most amazing things with ice swimming and I mean, look, at the end of the day, in any extreme environment, in the Bering Strait, in ice swimming, a swimmer cannot assist themselves in their own rescue in the unlikely event of becoming frozen. So that's the benefit of having a team around you. And that team is what you put in place to ensure that you have a safe outcome. But you train according to the limits. Yeah, there can be potential outcomes, but there can be potential outcomes in a marathon. There can be potential outcomes in any event.
Yeah. So as we know, tragically recently.
Absolutely. Yeah. So I think, I mean, there are limits with everything. The beauty of the ice is it forces extreme honesty within yourself. And
what do you mean?
What I loved about it is it called me out.
Yeah.
It forced me to look at every weakness that I had and fix every weakness. So if I went in and the breathing wasn't working and I couldn't breathe, there had to be a reason for that. So if I felt unsteady, then I had to fix that. So the beautiful thing about anything in the extremes is it forces you to be the best version of yourself. It increases every need to be brilliant at this moment.
Back to the open water swimming and like some of it, you'd have the willies reading about it. Like, I mean, the situations you're in the open sea, like never mind swimming through like walls of lion's mane and you're just being stung and on you go. But say that swim down in the Drake's Passage then. No one's ever swum there before. I think, is it three oceans meeting there?
Yeah.
But like, you have no control whatsoever over the situation, do you?
No.
And like, you're being thrown around like a rag doll kind of in this water.
Yeah. I think the interesting part of that swim, like Cape Horn in itself is an island 100 nautical miles south of the southern tip of America. So it's not actually attached. So you get to the most southerly tip of Port William and then you steam in a boat 100 miles south of the southern tip. So you're in a very remote area.
Yeah.
There were swims that I could have done in and around the island from lighthouse to lighthouse. But to me, those swims were similar to swimming in Ventry. They were protected by the land.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah,
I mean,
it's
a cold environment, but it's a controlled environment.
Yeah.
The reason I, at that particular 2016-17 and at that time were great twilight years for me, where I was very unhappy with my brain. I was unhappy. I felt I was cruising. And I do have this unhealthy relationship with wanting to be, I suppose, the best version of myself. And it's not unhealthy.
So you never want to be comfortable?
Well, I just love the fact that when I look back at myself, I am all that in my mind.
Yeah.
Very few people will go with me on it, but, you know. And I think it's about the mental strength when you turn the key in the door that you can face life. And you have to keep those skills honed up and survival and go into those spaces. So the opportunity came to do the Meeting of the Oceans. And at that particular point, 2 miles or 1 mile or 2 miles south of the southern tip of Cape Horn, there is the Meeting of the Oceans. So you have the Antarctic, the Arctic, the Antarctic, the Pacific and the Oceans and the Atlantic Ocean meeting. So at that point, you have no land east or west as the world turns. And that is the significant issue on that swim. By taking that option, it just meant, that those rogue waves, similar to the Bering Strait, there would be very little control. But that wasn't the reason I went there. I went there to see if I could trust myself and putting a team around me. But, you know, I wouldn't have had all the skills. I can't scream, I can't shout, I can't cry. They have to watch me. So it is a beautiful relationship.
Mm.
So it's like anything, your risk assessment, your safety plan and the uncomfortable conversations in the unlikely event of something happening. What is the outcome? And unfortunately, the outcome was in a potential safety plan that there is nobody coming. We're too far south. So the reason I chose it at the time is, again, this little voice inside of me saying, of course, you're capable of doing it and we'll get the proper team in place. So I signed up to do it. And as I went south and south and south and south, I was comfortable in my training. I had spent the entire winter, and it's what you do when nobody's watching. Like, I was spending an hour, 2 hours in 7 degree water and freezing myself, but keeping in control and pushing myself. And then training with my rescue team, Catherine and Chris, on casualty recovery. How do I manage? Dr. Patrick Buck stepped in several times on management of hypothermia. So we had a plan to bring me as best as I could to my limits and then manage me backwards. And I know that sounds a little bit strange, but that is the limits of the extremes. So going south of there, the biggest risk is that I wouldn't get across the ocean. The standard of the swim is I would start in the Pacific, swim a mile and get over the meridian into the Atlantic before anything happened.
Yeah.
So as we went south, the plan was that the Zodiac, the safety team, Catherine and Chris would come in to the water in the Zodiac and be near me, fully kitted, in the event of my needing assistance. But as we steamed south to Cape Horn, the lighthouse keeper, who is the commander of the island, Adana Dezo, he came over the VHF and said that the conditions were too bad for a Zodiac. If I wished to go in, I could go in without the Zodiac and the command boat.
So how far away is a potential rescue boat?
You see, this is the problem then, because I suppose because of what I know and a fishing family, it's steaming, which means that if it needs to turn, it needs to turn, takes time to turn. So it would have to be 100 metres away and then it would have to take time to turn. So the biggest fear then, it's like any risk assessment, risks change. A risk assessment, a safety plan are live plans. So I was given the option. The Zodiac is no longer in play. I can go back inside the island. If I want to go, I go now. I go on my own. They are going to keep their eye on me. I have to trust myself. I have to trust them. And then they promise to keep their eyes on me. So, yeah, I mean, that is the risk. That is the choice.
It's extraordinary stuff.
Yeah.
So without wanting
but I did
to...
it.
Yeah. Okay. And you didn't know till afterwards if you crossed the ocean.
No, you don't know.
So without wanting to make it all kind of pat and simple for people, So the message there for the rest of us, or what you can teach us, like, keep going?
Well, I think there's always progress in chaos. Even in chaos, there's progress, Brendan. And I think, like, staying strong is vital. Now, it's not always possible. I mean, we're all a work in progress.
Yeah.
And I mean, I go to those extremes every now and then. And then you go home and you turn the key in the door and you just love this normality. But at the same time, I think when there is chaotic situations and life can be strange and challenging, and, you know, there is always a little glint of light. For me, I would always think, you know, if you look at the chaotic situation of the Bering Strait or even the west coast of Ireland, there's always a team or people around us who can try and navigate us out of it. We can't see.
Yeah.
But they can, you know, between us all, we can figure out a way forward. But, you know, you do have to stay strong for a period of time in hope that whatever competition you have can weaken. So, yeah, it's trusting yourself. I mean, curling my fingers on that boat south of Cape Horn, for me, was one of the hardest things in the world. But the choice was, do I trust myself and my team or do I take a lesser option? And I just, at that point, the lesser option wasn't going to feed the beast, you know.
And that's the difference between you and most other people. We'll all take the
easy
option.
Much.
The book is called Limitless and it's extraordinary. It's published by Gill Books. It'll be in bookshops on Thursday. Nuala Moore, thank you very much.
Thank you for having me.
Email brendan@rte.ie.